Hello, and welcome to today's show where we'll be chatting about Marvel's Ant-Man. That's right, as Hank figures out where to point his tiny tank, we'll be asking if Scott Lang's the right tiny man for the big job as hopes Van Dyning to get in the suit. Joining me as always today is Ms. Marvel herself, Anna Harrison.
Hello.
Are you okay?
I'm great, thanks.
And Agent Martin Carter.
Hi.
Are you all well and good?
Excellent.
Fantastic. If this is the first time you're tuning in, please do note there are spoilers in this podcast. We're going to be talking about the whole movie as if you've already seen it. And whether you like it or what you hear or not, please remember to rate it, review it. And if you see us on social media, name a more iconic duo than your finger and that like button. I'll wait. Anyway, on with the show. Whole new cast, no recurring characters, applauses and boos, if you've got any, please, for Paul Rudd.
Woo!
Michael Douglas.
Yes. No.
Evangeline Lilly.
Yes.
No.
Corey Stoll.
Yes.
Bobby Cannavale.
Yep.
Anthony Mackie.
Oh, yeah.
And Michael Peña.
Woo, woo, woo!
There are, of course, other people in this movie as well, but they're probably the most prevalent names.
That's also, like, the biggest cheer you've given anyone throughout the entire series of this
podcast.
I love
Michael Peña in this movie.
More than any other A-list celebrity. I mean, come on.
What can I say? I'm jazzed.
Wow.
So what do you think about the whole new cast?
Really good.
Do you think it's pretty good?
Yeah, I really do. I think it... I mean, right from the off, it's such a bizarre movie in so many ways. And, I mean, I can't say enough for Paul Rudd. Like, that was such a great casting choice. And, I mean, considering he's sort of the heart of it, there's... I have so many issues with, like, kind of quirky groups of characters. Like, I think we've talked about this in the past. But I loved his little thieving party. Like, they're Michael Peña and T.I. When I saw it again, I was like, oh, yeah, what the hell is T.I. doing in here? But actually, he was great, too. I really enjoyed it. Both parts, both large and small.
Yeah, absolutely.
I enjoyed the cast of characters around Paul Rudd when he was a burglar.
Mm.
Everyone else, I ain't got any time for.
Oh, no.
Michael Douglas was terrible in this film. Let's not beat around the bush.
I mean, he's always been a bit of a scenery chewer.
Evangeline Lilly, her personality was defined by her bob. No, didn't like this cast. Paul Rudd was all right.
Yeah.
But if you look at all, it felt like we were like in phase one again. It felt like near Hulk territory for me.
What?
It just felt like... It was just like watching a TV show. It was very televisual. Some of the scenes in the house could have been acted like they weren't in the same room. It was just, here's me doing my line. Nah, not for me, this one.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I don't think you're going to make it back for the next episode. I think...
But, I mean, at this point in the MCU, casting someone like Michael Douglas takes you completely out of the universe, and it's like it's definitely Michael Douglas. There's no amount of acting that you can do that can. If you look at Anthony Hopkins, he fit in that world really well.
What about casting someone like I don't know? What about casting someone like Martin in Black Panther?
Well, we had a problem. Like I kind of agree. Like because the Martin Freeman one
Martin
was a
Freeman
huge problem
pulled me out.
Which future listeners will hear our discussion about it. But we went into that with some detail, but I really dislike the casting of Martin Friedman. But I didn't actually have a problem with Michael Douglas in this. I mean, yes, it is a little bit out of the universe that's been built, but I kind of enjoyed him. The sort of cocky asshole scientist. I mean, Pym has a sort of complicated history in the Ant-Man comics in general. There's some history of like spousal abuse. There's all like some very...
He set an army of ants on his tiny wife when they were having a domestic dispute.
Right.
Yeah, he's an intense character. So in some ways, I kind of felt like the kind of asshole-ish qualities that I think Michael Douglas has kind of embodied throughout all his roles, I thought fit really well with him, actually.
And he created Ultron.
Oh,
in the comics,
right.
Did a lot more damage.
Yeah.
So
it's just... Not for me. No, he was just Michael Douglasing everywhere.
But isn't it the same as, like, Samuel L? Isn't he the same sort of figure as Samuel L?
I mean, there are huge A-list characters throughout the entire MCU. It's just, at this point, when you're back in an origin story, I don't know, I feel like he was just there, and every time I saw him, I saw Michael Douglas.
Okay. I mean, that's... I suppose my life has been less exposed to Michael Douglas, so it wasn't really as big. I think one of the only movies I remember him from properly is The Game. Was he in The Game?
I think so.
But that's it.
It's too much Michael Douglas. I've said Michael Douglas too many times.
Say it once more.
Michael Douglas.
Oh, God.
This new podcast equipment is working out beautifully, isn't it? Heard every spittle in that.
If you're a fan of ASMR, you'll be a fan of Martin's new podcast, saying Michael Douglas. So, obviously, he was just one of many cast members. We've already talked a little bit about Paul Rudd, but he was kind of front and centre in this movie. And he's a pretty big name as well. Do you think that he fit the role of a superhero? Because he's quite different to a lot of the other Avengers that we've already got established.
Yeah, I think he really did. And I think you needed someone like him. Again, because it's just like on paper, Ant-Man sounds insane. Like, it doesn't sound like something that, like, how can you have any interesting dynamic with such a crazy concept? So I think you needed someone like Paul Rudd who brings a good level of humor. And it's not that he had gravitas, but you took him seriously. Like, I believed his desire to, you know, I'm doing this because I want to be with my kid, and all the kind of suspect decisions he makes. It felt more in character given, like, the kind of person he portrays so well. So I really liked him in this movie a lot.
Nice.
He did knock it out of the park for me.
I think if
Chris Pratt is the benchmark for Fish Out of Water, I Don't Know What I'm Doing, Isn't It All a Bit Fun? Like, that's the level I expect now.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm not sure Paul Rudd. I didn't laugh that much with Paul Rudd,
really?
Whereas I laughed quite a lot with Chris Pratt. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you're going to keep hating on this podcast, there's a pot of coffee on the go. So I'll take it with a little drop of milk. No, that was serious.
I'm open for being convinced about why this is a great addition to the MCU.
I mean, so here's the thing with Ant-Man. I think particularly because it's sandwiched between a few really, really outstanding Marvel films, and it's like the films leading up to this one have been so world building that I think this one does feel like kind of a step back. I can remember in cinemas afterwards being like, well, that was fun, but that's not really what I want anymore. Like, I kind of missed a more kind of dynamic to it. But just sort of rewatching it again, I did sort of re-remember all the fun. Like, it's fun. Like, there's so many ridiculous scenes, like, so many great montages. But when, like, Michael Pena is doing, like, the explanation, like, that is so great. And even though it was shown in the trailer, and I've seen it so many times, the Thomas the Tank Engine sort of falling over when they're, you know, when they go back to, like, the large scale of how the fights are going on, those sort of visual elements I thought were so unique and fun. And yeah,
I guess I did like those bits. I guess it's all the other, like, there was so much chat in this film.
There was a lot of chat
between, like, the family dynamic and back in the house and just chatting about sad things. And
do you think they spent all their money on a large Thomas the Tank Engine?
Yeah. Maybe.
Their whole budget was like, we've got to have this one scene. You might need to talk and dialogue for the rest of the 90 minutes.
It's like, oh, we spent all our money on a Thomas Tank Engine. We couldn't afford charisma.
Oh! I think... I kind of disagree. Let me just be really clear. I'm not a lover of this movie. I don't think it's amazing. It can really go either side of the fence for me. I think it's good that it establishes Ant-Man, because I think he's a pretty cool character in the MCU, especially in Civil War. Where I guess he's not Ant-Man, but we'll come to that. But I like some of the other characters as well. As you've said, the little burglar team around him's great.
They're fun.
But I think it doesn't really do anything to endear me to the characters in this movie. It just, aside from Michael Pena and T.I., it doesn't do anything for me to get me excited about Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm certainly can not see Michael Douglas again. I think he's all right in this movie, but I'm not too bothered if he's in the next movie or not.
Yeah.
But it just wedges those characters into the Marvel Universe somehow.
But we've talked before about some characters not needing their own full-blown films. Like, Dan, you've said before that you wanted to merge together the Hulk and Iron Man. And Anna, you said you could probably get away with not having Iron Man 3 and fitting some of that story into. I feel like we could have done that with Ant-Man. There could have been something in Civil War which required a small man, and then they found Ant-Man, and then you could have him in the aeroplane
scene. I suppose
you've
got Spider-Man's introduction, though, in...
Yeah.
Too many people whose names are hyphen man. I need to...
It might be Grumpy Man. I'm very sorry.
No,
it's okay.
I see what you mean. I think you're probably right. There probably isn't enough like kind of world building that happens in this movie that necessarily justifies it having its own film. But I think especially with the way he comes into Civil War, like that alone, that having all those characters together in Civil War, for me, that makes this movie worth it. Because I feel like otherwise, I don't know, I was excited to see him interact with everyone else. And even though they could only afford probably the lowest paid Avenger in this movie, even that one, the two of them were like having their little fight, I was looking forward to seeing them having to interact again.
Would you say that Ant-Man is the least paid Avenger?
Oh, I meant Falcon.
Oh, Falcon.
Yeah, so
okay.
in Ant-Man, the only Avenger they could afford was Falcon.
Oh, I don't think Falcon's bottom of the pile.
No,
it's Hawkeye.
I think it would be Spider-Man, because especially in the UK, you pay younger people. You know, until you're 21, I think you can pay a lower hourly salary. So I think it'd be Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's on like an apprentice contract.
Yeah, but he's got high school. If you've got to have someone just hanging around guarding the complex or whatever it was he was doing, I can't really think of anyone other than Falcon who would be up for that. Also, not to mention just in straight up star power, Anthony Mackie is probably getting the least amount of money out of a lot of the people that they could have afforded to put into this film. They blew their budget on Thomas the Tank Engine. They had to pick one of the Avenger cast members who didn't cost
them. I thought I liked that bit.
Oh, I did too. Yeah.
It endeared me to Falcon.
Yeah.
Totally. Definitely. Yeah, yeah.
More than anyone else in this movie.
And didn't he say, there was a great line at the end, he's like, Captain America does not need to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, it is pretty embarrassing for Falcon getting beaten up by a tiny man.
Yeah.
Still, it works out for him.
Yeah,
he gets to have his little moment in the post credits, but we'll come on to that much later on in this episode. Another thing that I think this movie does is set up the scene where Ant-Man appears in Civil War really well. When he turns up in the car, I know we get to watch it, so we're probably going to watch it this weekend and refresh our memories. But when he turns up with like the beaten up car and the rucksack and everything, and he's kind of like, yeah, I think we can do something here, it really makes that scene kind of worth it for me in
me
Civil
too.
War.
Yeah.
Moving on. Anyway, so another main character who's dying to get in the suit in this movie is Hope.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Hope Van Dyne, Evangeline Lilly? Any smiles over there, Martin? No?
I thought there'd be so much potential with this character, and it was either really poorly written or really poorly acted, or a mixture of both. But she could have been so amazing. And maybe she'll be amazing in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And maybe that'll be her time to shine moment in the sun. But I never felt like there was a justifiable reason for her not to be Ant-Man. Like, I know the reason of, like, I don't want it to happen to you what happened to your mum was the reason given. But I was like, this is another example of when a woman is overqualified for a job and loses it out to an unqualified white man.
Yeah, I do agree with it. I always have huge problems with storylines where it's like, oh no, you can't do something because I'm protecting you, or you can't do something. I've made the decision that you can't do it because it's for your own good. And I think that could have worked if, like we've said so many times, there was a little bit more air around certain things, because it seemed like she was crazy smart, had a good head on her shoulders, and all you have to do is tell her, don't go into the quantum realm. Like, just avoid that at all costs.
Because you have to specifically press another button to go into the
quantum. It's not like you can accidentally slip into it.
I like how
anything.
It's just another button, though. This really deadly thing that we don't need to slip into. I'm not going to take it out of the suit.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put a button there in case.
But it's true. And also, I loathe any kind of plot that's driven forward by people, like, not telling each other things. Like, the lack of communication for no good reason. Because also, if she's so pissed off she can't get in the suit, telling her how your mom died flipping ages ago would probably have helped that quite a bit. And I think this is when, like, in general, Hank Pym is quite a controlling character. Like, throughout the comics, I always sort of felt that anytime it delved into him. He was an interesting... I liked the flashback, because, like, with Stark being there, they totally, like, were combatants in a lot of ways. But I mean, that one line that Paul Rudd had about how, like, I'm expendable, you're not. I think that's something that actually could have been built up a bit more, because I imagine no parent wants to put their child in harm's way, but it did seem very much more played to the effect of, like, you're not allowed to do this, go to your room, like, yeah. type thing.
And even if she'd got a bit of more time towards the end of the film, you know, like when we first met Black Widow, yeah. and she had that whole kind of thread of her going off and kind of attacking through a I can't remember what it was, like through an office building, yeah. do you remember? If we'd have had one of those for Hope, where she's not in the suit, but she's still...
kicking butt.
Yeah, she's still, yeah. you know, that would have been really redemptive for me, but... Mm. Everything she did was as a result of a man doing something, and she cried a bit too much for me. I was like, she was very Liv Tyler for me in this film. Like, I saw a lot of synergy between the two of them, and yeah. I was like, are we really here? That was like 10 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I do like that. I mean, she...
3 years ago.
How many years ago?
Eight years ago.
God, yeah. I agree with everything you're saying, and it was quite frustrating to see how she was just kind of continuously thwarted. But I quite liked her dynamic with Paul. Even though I was disappointed there was a kiss at the end, I was so hoping there would just be this like professional relationship. I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing her in The Wasp. Actually, I feel like
that's gonna be her time to shine.
Yeah, it? Yeah, that's gonna be.
She can teach Ant-Man a few things.
Yeah, I'm gonna reserve final judgment on the MCU's treatment of Hope until after Ant-Man and the Wasp, I think.
Dan,
yeah,
do you have a new Hope?
Not really.
I was trying to do puns like
that. I mean, so obviously, I know what you're trying to do. Sucked, right? Everything you said is completely valid, and I completely agree. And I'm not trivializing it by saying this, but as well, I don't have a new Hope because, well, Hope bored me in this movie. Mm. And that's probably due to the writing,
yeah.
et cetera. But I just had no reason to get invested in it. Even if I was like, oh, yeah, put her in the suit, Michael Douglas, there was nothing making me say, you should put her in the suit. Why aren't you doing this? I was just kind of like, oh, well, you know, just find someone else, whatever. Mm. It really didn't make any difference for me whether it was Hope in the suit or not, to be honest. Mm. And I thought the reasons that they got Paul Rudd to be in there, I know I keep saying Paul Rudd, Scott Lang, the reason they got Scott Lang was great. The little burglary scene where he makes him rob his own house and the fact that keeps coming up. And I thought that was some of the best Ant-Man bits, where he was really applying his knowledge to breaking open the safe and then, like, melding the little thumbprint and glue and stuff.
Yeah, that was cool. We're Home Alone.
We saw... Yeah, exactly. And we saw that he needed... We saw that was a quality that Michael Douglas was... that Hank Pym was looking for. But we never then saw that sort of resourcefulness again, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, this is my other question is... So... Paul Rudd's been put in prison for this particular job he did, where a company he worked for, he stole their money and gave it back to the people. But has Scott Lang done other jobs? So he refers to himself as a cat burglar, but the only job that's ever talked about is that one. So I was always sort of, especially given the fact that his wife just, like, seemed to have completely, like, cut ties with him, was furious, even though he seemed to be, like, not that it was justified, his crime, but, you know, it seems to be done, and a one-off done for noble purposes.
There was quite a lot of hints, though, of them saying, you know, he's never going to change his ways. Yeah. As if he's got a track record.
He had a crew of...
That's true, he did have a crew.
I don't think you accrue a crew if you do it just as a one-off.
Okay, so that last one was just maybe the one that he got caught for, because it was such a big...
I think that was like a big profile one.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's perfectly reasonable as well to think that his family have moved on and grown up a lot since he's been in prison.
Oh my God, how cute is that girl? She might be the cutest kid in the MCU so far. Flipping loved her.
Yeah, she was pretty cute. And I actually, I really liked his ex-wife or wife's partner, the cop.
Yeah, I really liked him too. It's so nice to finally see like a step-parent like not getting the completely raw end of the stick in a movie. I quite liked him.
He did a good job. I thought he did a good job, and he was quite funny in some scenes as well.
Yeah, and clearly cared about Cassie, which I quite liked him, actually. I like that a lot, that dynamic.
And I think,
why are all step parents police officers? They feel like every film there's a police officer in it.
Happens quite a bit.
You just gotta have
classic trope.
A classic spot on.
Speaking of classic tropes, did anyone notice in this film how many key cards were used in the facility?
Good
job, Pepper Potts isn't in this movie.
She would never get out.
When that tank was coming through the thing, she'd be like, "Whoop! I can't get out." When they were just marching through the facility, I was like, "This was not built with Pepper in mind." It really reminded me of Iron Man 1. I enjoy thinking about that.
The facility was very so the what is it called? Pym Cross.
I
want to say Pym Industries, but I'm just really getting stark and. Mm. Pym crossed over there, but I thought it was a really weird building in terms of the interior, how it had these like lovely glass rooms that's like, look at our service base, and then one creepy dome room where they do all their, it's like completely padded, and they do all of their secret
dealings in there. The evil science happens there.
It's like, there's no way you built that without knowing that this was going to be used for evil at some point.
Well, I thought the same thing as well, like what production company put together like the Wasp video, you know, when he does like the promo for what this tiny tiny soldier could do. I was like, this is an evil video. Like anyone watching that being like, you are definitely the bad guy.
There's lots of very obvious bad guys in this movie. And I think Yellow Jacket is probably one of the most obvious bad guys in the whole of the MCU.
He really is.
In my opinion, Yellow Jacket is the worst bad guy across the Marvel Universe.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, do you not remember our conversation literally the other week with Nebula?
I think no.
But we know how Dan feels about that. Let's not open that door yet, shall we?
I think Nebula was just used wrong, right?
Yeah.
But Yellow Jacket has absolutely... He's a horrible person.
Yeah.
And not in a way that makes me go, oh, you're motivated by things that have turned you bad. He's not an interesting bad guy. He's just a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah.
He reminded me of all the Phase 1 villains. Scientist gone bad.
Yeah.
He even had a bald head.
I know.
Oh, come on. Are you saying that all bald people are evil?
In the MCU, yes, they are.
In your world, all stepdads are policemen and all bald people are evil.
This is why I don't like this film. It's like cookie cutter.
To be fair, when a bald guy shows up in an MCU movie, there is like a 70% chance he's going to be evil.
Does Thanos have hair? No, he does not.
Well, he might do. I mean, he probably doesn't, but he might be invisible.
Does Nebula have hair? No, she does not.
It's a good point. But also, the thing that really struck... So they had a brief line in there about how apparently messing with the Pym particle can make you extra cray. But he also just didn't seem like a particularly good businessman either. Like, he had a goop gun. Like, surely that would be something that most people, like most evil corporations that were interested in the Yellow Jacket would be so interested in that goop gun.
Yeah.
So
he could be selling goop guns.
Yeah.
He's trying to peddle his Yellow Jacket to the world.
Yeah, can't get the shrink to work.
Really, everyone's just wanting goop guns.
Huh? Those poor sheep. I was a bit upset when the sheep turned to goop.
But I'd like to bet he's like, we haven't driven home the fact that he's super evil. Let's have him flick the case to like have the sheep like stagger around.
When he mops it up that guy from the bathroom floor and the tissue doesn't quite mop all of it, I was like,
you could tell someone's going to slip on that.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be like, what have I slipped on?
It's on the bottom of my shoe. Trod it around the house.
Oh my God. It might stain something.
Oh.
And then forever they're like, I've got this weird goop stain. Where actually it's...
Full person.
This.
I mean, there was a lot of death in this movie. Like, a lot. Think about all the ants. So many dead ants.
Yeah.
That was weird, right? I mean, this is the other thing why, like, Ant-Man is such a crazy thing. It's like, oh, he gets tiny, he can get big. Like, he has this power even when he's tiny. Oh, and he can control ants.
Like, lots of things in the MCU push your boundaries of what you think is acceptable. We'll come on to this a lot with Doctor Strange.
Sure.
But in Ant-Man, I could get why he was small and why he eventually will be. Like, I get that we're putting more space between the atoms.
Yeah.
I can see that. But commanding ants because you've put in a hearing aid And
that is at least a true Ant-Man power.
But they don't have a long life cycle either, so you'd have to be continually attaching things to ants.
No, they don't have to attach a node to all the ants that he wants to control. They're just the super ones.
Yeah.
That they want to do.
So Anthony got a saddle. Oh, poor Anthony. Most tragic ant death since Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Anyway, no, come on.
What's been a more tragic ant death?
That movie that copied A Bug's Life, Ants.
Oh, yes, good. Yeah.
That movie called Ants.
Yeah, but it was important to say that it copied A Bug's Life because it did.
It was sort of like the adult version of Bug's Life, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, but I don't know. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the ants. I like the training montage where he was learning like the Latin names of ants, as if that's helpful.
But at least it's a classic power as well. It's not like they've invented something ridiculous for the movie. That is what Ant-Man can
do.
A big part of his power is being able to control ants. As ridiculous as it is.
But the whole point of the MCU was finding the balance between being faithful to the comics and making it accessible to a broad cinema-going audience. And I feel like it's done that. But then in this phase and in phase three, they're just like, now we're going to do quantum fields, we're going to go looping through space, we're going to have Benedict Cumberbatch doing Tai Chi and it reveals space elements. It's just like the rule book has just gone out of the window and Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man is where they're testing that. And I feel like we should have nipped that in the bud.
But I feel it has to change, though. Are you being resistant to change, mine?
I'm usually very open to change, but here, yes. And talking to ants telepathically is the line that I cannot cross.
Oh no!
Wow!
Oh no!
Well, that's good. I mean, you're gonna have to get used to it.
It hasn't come up that much. Like, he didn't need a single ant in Civil War.
No.
So, but like, they serve useful purposes. You know, when they were like covering up the screen, or they even
when they flew him up to a plane. Oh, sorry, a helicopter in the sky. Oh no, and a plane.
Yeah. That was meant.
Wow.
But like you were saying earlier, Dan, like, as soon as the ants get involved, Paul Rudd's heisting cat burglar abilities are just not needed whatsoever. Like, everything he does once he gets the ants telepathically, he doesn't have a need for any of his other skills. Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of devised a plan of how to get in there, but that was a team effort. Nothing else. I mean, the Mission Impossible bit, maybe, when he was going through, but everything else was ant-driven.
It's true.
Yeah,
an ant-driven
plot. He was never, like, put in the situation and... There was times where he was put in a situation and you saw him get out of it. Like when he was tying the cage and he used the embiggener to make the things bigger to smash the windows.
Yeah.
Like, he did use his resourcefulness, but we never saw it in as detailed a way as we did in that opening cat burglary scene where he was... And it's kind of good that even if you don't know anything about safes, I know nothing about safes, right? Let's just put this out there. But it's good when you hear characters explain their knowledge of something like, oh, this is it's made from bits of the Titanic and it's sunk and ice and yada, yada, yada.
And thankfully, all the ingredients and components I need to open it are also right in the basement.
Wow! Which is useful. But it's even though it's something we don't know anything about as viewers, it's still good to just hear the characters' thought processes and why they're actually worth anything at all and not just a complete piece of trash.
but <Hello bar.
laughs> very quickly as well, let me just say, I thought the effects in this movie, though, were great.
Agreed.
The first time we see him go Smallland in the bathtub was awesome.
Excellent. That whole scene, like that first shrinking. So good.
We're just misusing words left, right, and centre here.
Yeah, I did enjoy that those parts of the film, and especially the Thomas the Tank.
Yeah, that was great. And I never got tired of it either. Like, there was they played with it in so much. Like that one scene where he's running through the Cross has that little model of like new Cross Industry building. He's running through that like really jumping over cars and everything. I thought that was really clever. Although it did just make me think of Zoolander and the model of the school and him being like, what is this, a school for ants? Like,
yeah. But I didn't think we got that much Ant-Man-ness. There wasn't.
Oh, really?
I think the balance of how much time we got of Ant-Man being small versus how much time we got of him having chats with Michael Douglas, the proportions weren't right for me.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt mostly satisfied by the level of action in this, although I had less issue with some of the other actors cast in this. But I think every time they did use it, it was so effective and looked so good. I would worry that if they did it too much, because like I said, I sort of never became tired of it. Every time they did it, it was a new like thing to look at, a new interaction to experience. I appreciate that it never really felt like it became commonplace.
Speaking of commonplace as well, thinking about how commonplace this movie is in the Marvel Universe now, how does it contribute to the rest of it? We've seen Falcon, which we talked about, but really there's little else that ties this movie aside from a little dose of Hydra.
Yep, true.
And S.H.I.E.L.D., I guess.
Yeah, I guess their new facility and everything.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite funny when they, that one line where when Cross is like introducing them and he's like, oh, this is Hydra. They're different now. They do different things now. Like that, and I was like, oh, what things? Like, what are they into? We didn't get much more than that, really.
But at the very beginning of the film, where Peggy Carter and Howard Stark, they're in that Avengers, they're in that S.H.I.E.L.D. building.
Yeah.
That we thought had been built after the events of New York. Remember talking about it in Captain America the Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
And I asked how long that building had been there.
Oh.
And you guys were saying, well, it was either one of two things. It was, it had always been there, but they were making more of a show of it, or they'd built it specifically as a response to the events of New York.
That's a good point.
But actually, it must have been there since the 60s.
It's a pretty fancy building to have made in the 60s.
Yeah, but yeah, the construction was going on. It's a good point.
Wow.
Must have always been
good spot, Martin.
Thanks.
I'll lovingly await that on the soon-to-be-released Marvel timeline.
Maybe I'll say it in my saying Michael Douglas podcast. S.H.I.E.L.D. facilities.
Episode 1, Michael Douglas. Episode 2, S.H.I.E.L.D. facilities.
That's got quite a nice ring. S.H.I.E.L.D. Right. Should we move on?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess there's not much to talk about in this movie. We've seen bad guys who are pretty one-note. Mm. We've seen good guys who are pretty one-note.
The one good guy moment that I really enjoyed from what you would think was the bad guys, the people who were helping Paul Rudd break into the facility. Do you remember when he... I can't remember the character's name, but he knocked out the guy to get into the server room.
Oh yeah, Michael Peña's character.
But then he pulled him out when the building was going to explode.
Oh yeah, that was
such a an unusual beat for a Marvel foot. It's usually like you leave the minions behind, don't you?
Yeah, his little team of burglars as well. He's really similar to what you keep saying about Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow, and Hawkeye. In other movies, how they're kind of like, not the normal people, but they're the
grounding.
Grounding. Those little team of burglars, they're kind of the grounding in this movie, because they just keep popping up to every scenario and being like, back it up. And it is how they react to this absurd situation of a really tiny good. Man and lots of weird superhero stuff.
Yeah, I really like
really
that.
Really makes the movie. But yeah, good guys and bad guys. I guess it all culminates in this weird final battle. We've mentioned Thomas the Tank Engine, but that whole scene where they're miniature and fighting around the playset.
So great.
How do you feel about that as a final battle for this movie?
I thought it worked. I thought it was really great. Really great. Just like, and again, this battle more so than I think they've gotten better throughout movies to like feel a proper sense of jeopardy, even if you know the character is going to survive. I didn't feel the jeopardy in this one, but I still really enjoyed it. Like it was just, I think if you're not going to have the jeopardy, you've got to balance it out with something awesome looking, and I really feel like they did that here.
Cool. Yeah, I think if I'd have had more empathy for perhaps Paul Rudd and his relationship with his daughter, I might have felt that like there was more at stake.
Yeah.
But and then it went into the quantum realm, which was a bit like that. Whoa. That bit was a bit strange. I really enjoyed the playset piece, so that was really fun.
Yeah. You're not a fan. I think I'm getting a sense that you're not a fan of weird graphics and stuff.
Wait for Doctor Strange.
Exactly what I was about to say. Where
you
like
know you have an opening monologue for the podcast. I'm going to have a monologue for why I don't like Doctor Strange.
Do you want to do the opener for Doctor Strange?
No, because we'll lose listeners.
The quantum realm, I thought it was interesting that he went in there, but unexplained how he got out.
Well, I think that must be where sort of calling back, like, oh, he's smart, he thinks outside the box type thing. But he just sort of stuck it in Bigginer in the belt thing. I guess it was one of those things where he was just willing, like, oh, this might tear me apart, but let's go for it, yeah. You know, type.
I can hear the echoes of my daughter in my ears through
The love
realm.
Of my child.
Oh, man, imagine being stuck spinning in the fetal position in the quantum realm for all of eternity.
Oh, God.
With those graphics all around you, slowly losing your mind,
Martin's
spinning
hell.
There.
This is like my regular day at work. Wow. In the fetal position under my desk.
Graphics all over the shop. Yep.
I'll tell you what, it's a pretty tiny man, it's a pretty tiny podcast.
Yeah.
Let's
do the final question here.
All right.
Anna, stay or go?
I think it should stay. I know it doesn't like world build as much as the rest, but for me, it's just worth it getting to know Scott Lang better. I really, really enjoyed Paul Rudd in this movie, and it made his entrance into Civil War totally worth it.
Cool, and I would keep the movie as well. Yeah, I think that's really good. I think it deserves to stay.
Yeah, not interested in what anyone else has.
No, Martin.
Do you know what? Throughout this podcast, I've warmed to the film.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice.
I would say for the moments with Paul Rudd and his crew, and for the fun action sequences, you can cut out all the rest. But for those reasons, it can stay.
I think, you know what? I completely agree with something that you said in that. How I felt about the one of the Iron Man movies where it could have been an Iron Man and Hulk movie. Mm. I think this could have been an Ant-Man and someone else movie.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who. Obviously,
Falcon.
Not Ant-Man and the Wasp, but something like that where we need a little bit more of another character that's probably already a little bit established, but they can really bring in a new character into the Marvel Universe with them. I agree with you on that one.
Excellent.
This could have been moved. Maybe not Ant-Man and Doctor Strange. So I think that would have sent you over the edge.
Right. I'm not coming in that week.
Right, so that's all for today's A Marvelous Lunch Break, everyone. If you are watching along, join us next week. We will be starting Phase 3 with Captain America's Civil War.
Thank you for listening to Phase 2, everyone.
Yeah.
Really good. Quick one on Phase 2, then. Do you think it was better or worse than Phase 1?
Oh, it's so tricky because it had so... I think it had more really, really high points, but there were some proper lows
You were at one end of the spectrum or the other with this phase.
Wow.
It didn't gradually come up to a peak like Phase 1 did.
If Phase 2 had ended with a movie the same as The Avengers, the first Avengers movie...
It did.
Yeah.
Ultron, it was great.
But it didn't have
It wasn't the Avengers movie. Yeah. We said this in the last one. It didn't have that, like...
Also incredible that Age of Ultron and Civil War came out within a couple of years of each other.
Yeah,
that's mental that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it as well, Civil War could easily be an Avengers movie.
Yeah.
So
it is the third Avengers movie, isn't it?
Oh my God. I'm so excited to get Phase 3 started off because I think, and we're waiting on the Infinity War, so fingers crossed.
There we go.
But I think it's one of the best bits of the MCU that we get.
I can't wait.
So I'm super excited to start watching that. We'll be watching Civil War this weekend and talking about it next week. So please, if you're watching along at home, get that in your VCR. remember to subscribe to the podcast. Turn on notifications so you get to join us first. And Anna, if in the meantime, listeners want more, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Anna Marvelous, 2 N's, 2 L's.
And Martin.
Martin Loves on Twitter and Instagram.
Fantastic. And I am at DVM Preston across Twitter and Instagram. This week, I'm going to be hosting a poll on whether people thought Phase 1 or Phase 2 was better. So if you're one of my 4 followers, please vote on that. This week, we did which do you prefer, Giant Man, Ant-Man, or normal-sized Paul Rudd? Normal-sized Paul Rudd was the winner. Yeah. But he doesn't have Twitter, so obviously I couldn't piggyback off of his fame or anything, so we'll see. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, everyone. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Post credits. in like 10 seconds. What do you think?
Yeah, they were good. Loved seeing Winter Soldier setting up for Civil War. That was everything. Evangeline Lilly's going to be the Wasp. We knew that already.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was quite an obvious one.
But yeah. So excited to see Bucky again.
Yeah, me too. That one was exciting. The Wasp suit was
looks cool.
Fun. It was like, oh, she finally got something to do. Yeah. Excellent.
It looked like a cool suit as well. Yeah. It looked way cooler than the Ant-Man
so
suit.
So much cooler.
Just like a leather bike jacket.
Do you know, people have said to me that they say, why did you never talk about the post-credits scene? I'm like, we've got to wait for the theme music to end.
Good job we told them about that now.
But this is going to be in the post-credits section. Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a PSA at the start of the next podcast. But, you know...
If you're here, well done.
If you've got any problems with that, Martin, I think I know a guy.
that's how we should end.
Yes. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me once again. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.